You're listening to the micro version of the Savage Lovecast, www.savagelovecast.com.
If you're stuck in a relationship quandary, or if you're looking for sexual harmony, well, there's nothing you can't pass on the Savage Lovecast.
OnlyFans. I was going to talk about the OnlyFans situation at the top of this week's show, but the OnlyFans situation seems to have resolved itself. OnlyFans is a platform where people can subscribe to content creators who then share exclusive photos and videos on the site. It's a site worth billions, thanks to the sex workers and porn performers the platform marketed itself to and recruited when it first launched in 2016. And then a week ago, OnlyFans announced it was banning all sexually explicit content from its site because banks, credit card companies, processors were forcing them to. They reversed course. In a week, OnlyFans turned around and said a week later, basically, we hear you, and announced that they weren't going to ban sexually explicit content after all and would no longer be pivoting to I don't know what. I don't know what they planned to pivot to the week before last. Facetune teenagers doing lip syncs and cooking tutorials and other shit people can get for free on YouTube and TikTok right now. How are you going to make money at that? But that was their plan a week and a half ago. What seems to have made the difference here, and what I see as a sign of real progress, the New York Times, Washington Post, CNN, Daily Papers, NPR, mainstream publications went to sex workers and porn stars to get quotes about how OnlyFans was doing to them what Facebook and Instagram and Craigslist had already done to them. And how this, being driven off the internet, was making their lives harder and sex work more dangerous. Not eradicating sex work, not ending it, just making it more dangerous. That's new, and it made a huge difference. Abigail Higgins has a terrific piece at The Lily. Sex workers rallied together when OnlyFans banned sexually explicit content. They believe their voices are finally being heard. That's the headline. Go read it. I'm not the only one who thinks that this new development, reporters talking to sex workers about sex work, is making a difference, is creating some sort of seismic shift, some change. You know, if you read stories written about gay people from 5 decades ago, they didn't talk to gay people. They didn't talk to us. They talked about us. When that changed, things started to change for gay people. Seems to me that until very, very recently, stories written about sex workers and porn performers in mainstream publications, they talked about sex workers and porn performers, not to them. That's changing. That's changed. It took a few decades to get from talking to gay people about gay people to the progress we've seen on gay rights. But we wouldn't have seen that progress if that hadn't happened. And that couldn't have happened if gay people weren't willing to talk, if gay people weren't out. I think we're on a similar trajectory here with sex workers and sex workers' rights. From finally quoting gay people in stories about gay people to marriage equality in 40 years, here's hoping we go from quoting sex workers in stories about sex work to decriminalization of sex work in less time. All right, there's something I want to share, something kind of random before I get to your calls. Basically, I have a beef with the internet. The internet, you let me down this week. I mean, I heard right away about all four of the right-wing anti-vax, anti-mask radio talk show hosts who died of COVID last week. Jimmy DeYoung in Tennessee, Dick Farrell in Florida, Phil Valentine also in Tennessee, Mark Bernier also in Florida. And I am not complaining about that. I like to stay informed. But I am wondering, how many right-wing radio talk show hosts have to die before they start taking the pandemic seriously? And it looks like their preferred answer, the preferred answer of right-wing radio talk show hosts everywhere, is all of us have to die. And as tempting as it is to say, okay, sure, all of you is a price I am willing to pay, we have to think of all the other people being harmed by these dumb motherfuckers. Not just listeners, not just their listeners, people stupid enough to listen to them, but all the people these men and their listeners may have passed the infection on to. I'm really not worried about our strategic national stockpile of asshole right-wing radio talk show hosts running low. That's not my beef with the internet. And again, I like to stay informed. I was happy to hear about it. It's just that I heard about them, Jimmy, Dick, Phil, and Mark, right away, but somehow the internet failed to bring the gazebo situation in Eureka, California to my attention. It took a Savage Love reader, thank you, Mr. T, emailing me the link to the story like it was 1998 or something. Andrew Goff reports that the Lost Coast Outpost, news from Humboldt County, California, someone in Eureka, California mounted a dildo onto the roof of Eureka's Old Town gazebo. I can't do the gazeboner, as Goff dubbed it. I can't do the gazeboner justice here. Podcasting, not a visual medium. And there are photos and video at Andrew Goff's story about the gazeboner. Suffice it to say, whoever mounted that dildo to the roof of the gazebo in Eureka's Old Town intended for that dildo to stay mounted. You're going to want to watch the video. Lost Coast Outpost, Andrew Goff's story is titled, "The City of Eureka Has Removed the Mysterious Dildo Atop the Old Town Gazebo." Still a mystery as to who put that dildo there. But I gotta say, good job, dildo mounter. Good job, and keep them coming. And internet, come on. I'm as interested in hearing about dildos mounted to the roofs of gazebos as I am in hearing about dead right-wing radio talk show host. Please, internet, I want both those stories, both those kinds of stories to be brought to my attention promptly. All right, Savage Love A to Z, my new book celebrating the 30th anniversary of Savage Love, my advice column, comes out later this month. You can pre-order Savage Love A to Z now, and I would appreciate it if you did pre-order it now. And coming up on today's show on the Magnum, Corin McSherry from the Electronic Frontier Foundation is here to talk with me about Apple's new problematic surveillance policies. And of course, tons of your questions, tons of my answers, all that coming up on today's show. This episode of the Savage Lovecast is brought to you by omgyes.com, a website devoted to women's pleasure. Check it out and get a discount when you go to omgyes.com/savage. Me Undies makes feel-good underpants your butt will be proud to wear and you will be proud to be seen in. They will be the most comfortable pair of underwear you will ever own. And to check it out yourself, go to MeUndies.com/savage. This episode of the Savage Lovecast is brought to you by Talkspace, online therapy that makes it easy to get extra mental health support. For $100 off your first month, go to Talkspace.com and use the offer code SAVAGE.
Hey, Dan. I'm a longtime listener from California, and I really appreciated last week's episode when you mentioned armpit licking. And full disclosure, I was dumped last February, right before the pandemic. So it's been really difficult to listen to these sex success stories. I find myself sometimes skipping over them. But now that I'm vaccinated, I'm out and dating, and I met a sweet, sweet Tinder boy, and mind you, let me say, when I broke up with my boyfriend in February, he wasn't very much into foreplay, and it was a big issue in our relationship. Well, I guess my sex success story is now over a year later, I have found a sweet Tinder boy who not only loves to lick my feet, which I never knew was something fun while I watch TV, but also likes to lick my armpits. And it's been interesting to explore different parts of myself and different things that I didn't know were erogenous. So as a sex success story, sometimes you gotta let go of the bad foreplay to find some fun new things. And also, great advice to that previous caller. I appreciate, Dan, all the great work you do.
Thank you for calling and sharing. I'm so glad that after your shitty past boyfriend who didn't come through with the foreplay, you found yourself a sweet, sweet Tinder guy who showed you that armpits and feet can also be erogenous zones. Foreplay doesn't just have to focus on genitals and holes. We like to start each week's show with a success story. If you've got a good one, if you met a sweet, sweet Tinder boy or girl of your own, give us a call, share your success story, and we might open next week's Lovecast with yours.
Hi, Dan. I recently went out with a guy a few times and everything was going fine. And we decided to take things the next step and threw him back to my place and hooked up. It wasn't great at all, but that was not the, the problem. Like, we talked about it afterwards and cuddled for a little bit. So I thought everything was fine and, you know, do better next time. So when he was leaving, I gave him a hug, which is when I discovered that the used condom was in his pocket. And when I asked him why it was there, he mumbled something that I couldn't understand, and he turned around and he just left. And that was the last I've seen or talked to him. So I just want to know, like, is this a thing? I've never heard of this before. It's never happened to me before. How weird is it? I just am having a hard time kind of judging how strange this thing is that happened to me.
I'll answer your question in a second, but first I have a question for you. How are you hugging men that you can find condoms, used condoms even, in their pockets during the hug? Are you hugging these guys, or are you a pickpocket? Are you rifling through their pockets during a hug? What kind of hugging technique is that where you know, or you found that used condom in his pocket? Why a guy might do this? Well, a few years ago, five-ish years ago, there was a big kerfuffle that apparently the NBA, the National Basketball Association, was teaching players in these sex ed courses, sex ed crash courses, I think, for new NBA players who are suddenly millionaires, who are suddenly being pursued by, I guess, NBA groupies at games, that they should leave hotel rooms with their used condoms to prevent someone from impregnating herself with a used condom, with cum that you didn't intend to deposit in the vaginal canal or anywhere near the fallopian tubes. You want to leave with that shit, lest it be misused. Now, maybe this guy thinks he's an NBA player. Maybe this guy worried that you would impregnate yourself and then give him a call later and require him to pay child support. He figured he would just err on the side of leaving with his condom. Kind of creepy. It says something about who he thought you were, or what he thought you might be capable of. Or there's an alternate theory here. I don't know if this is more or less comforting a thought. Maybe he's one of those guys who likes to gobble up his own cum later when he is done. And rather than doing that in front of you, he thought he would do it in the Uber or the subway or whatever on the way home to spare you the sight. Pick your poison. This guy either thought you were a danger to him, that you might pull this move that allegedly somebody's pulled on NBA players at some point, or this guy opened that condom up on the subway and drank it down. Some guys think their life force is in their semen. There's some tantra bullshit that I've seen rattling around on the internet for years where guys will consume their own semen to recapture their spent life force. Other guys, you know, they grew up in sex negative households with crazy controlling parents who freaked out at the sight of a crusty tube sock. Other guys learned to destroy the evidence as children when they were young guys in middle school and high school masturbating and developed a taste for it. When you're at a low point, you might feel alone, but you're not. More than 50% of Americans struggle with their mental health. And the truth is, the reality is, we all need help sometimes. Good to have friends you can count on. My friend Philip really helped me over the last year. But sometimes you need a pro. Terry and I saw a couples counselor a few years ago, and he helped us. Asking for the support you need when you need it, it's actually a sign of strength. The Talkspace app makes it easy to connect with a licensed therapist, your licensed therapist on your schedule, without having to wait weeks before your next appointment. You can go anywhere and take your therapist with you. I'm a huge fan of therapy. I have had therapy myself, and Talkspace makes it easy to get the therapy, to get the help you need. Talkspace offers individual and couples therapy in addition to medication prescription services, and Talkspace works around your schedule at your convenience. You can send and receive unlimited messages with your dedicated therapist in the app, or schedule live video sessions with your licensed therapist from anywhere. Talkspace therapists are experts in dozens of specialties, including anxiety, depression, LGBTQ issues, relationships, and more. And through Talkspace, you can reach out and ask for and get the help you need to get your life back on track. Start feeling better with a single message. Match with a licensed therapist when you go to Talkspace.com and get $100 off your first month with the promo code SAVAGE. That's $100 off when you use the code SAVAGE, S-A-V-A-G-E, at Talkspace.com.
Hi, Dan. I'm a 37-year-old straight cis woman on the East Coast. I connected with a guy on one of the apps today, and we were texting, and we were talking about coaching and therapy, and he admitted to me that 4 years ago, he had a sexual relationship with an old therapist. He has a new therapist who he's working on this experience with. I am just struggling with a couple of things. Obviously, this history in itself, is this a red flag? Should I just cut and run? Again, I've only been texting with this guy. We haven't gone on any dates yet. Two, is it weird that he disclosed this to me so quickly? Obviously, both of these things could be, you know, a testament to poor judgment on his part. I did discuss it with him a little bit, and he said that he's looking for a relationship, so he just really wants to be upfront about this because he understands that it's a deal breaker for some people. Anyway, very strange. He seems like a really cool guy, so I was excited about potentially going out with him, but this is obviously something I'm grappling with.
If he disclosed this to you because he's still reeling from the experience, if he's traumatized, if he's still struggling to get past this and to function again sexually, maybe relevant information to some woman that he's thinking about meeting and perhaps dating. And yeah, maybe he did feel like he needed to disclose that to you. But the reason he gave for disclosing it to you is that it's potentially a deal breaker, for you that 4 years ago he fucked his therapist or got into a sexual relationship with his therapist. Yeah, I'm having a really hard time wrapping my head around that rationale. If that is his justification for sharing or oversharing this fact about himself that has no relevance or bearing on your relationship and isn't negatively impacting the relationship that you have with him so far because you haven't really even met him, you've just been texting with him, that seems a little bizarre. That seems to betray poor judgment, like you said. Like that's something I talk about a lot on the show. We look for people with good judgment. That seems to be a display of not great judgment on his part. Should you not see this guy? Should you not date this guy? We all have our moments. None of us exercises perfect judgment at all times. We all trip up from time to time. And if no one could ever get a date or get a second date or a third date or a second or third year of marriage because they tripped up once and displayed bad judgment, no one would be with anyone ever or not for long with anyone. So it's up to you. Are you going to give him the benefit of the doubt here and assume this was an isolated incident and an isolated example of poor judgment in the moment? Up to you. You could go out with him, get to know him a little bit better. You say you like him and then weigh this against everything else you get to know about him. But if it keeps coming, if there are more examples, if the better you get to know him, if the more text messages you exchange with him, if it becomes clear that he overshares, shares things with you that may not be relevant, or that at this early stage of the relationship, he shouldn't be burdening you with, then you're going to want to end it. Cut and run. Thank him for his time. Tell him you hope he gets better. Wish him luck, not fuck, with his new therapist. And hopefully, with the help of his new therapist, he'll be in good enough working order to begin dating someone else in the future. And then wait for a more appropriate time in the relationship to show that other person all his scars. There's a moment that where intimacy develops to the point where you do begin to share the things with someone else that you would know better than to share right out of the gate. Because you will scare people away, and you should know that. Like, part of good judgment is knowing what might scare someone else away. That doesn't mean you can't have traumas, issues, things that, as that person makes a larger and larger emotional investment in you, they might need to know or reach a point where they really want to know. But right now, when it's still just texting, yeah, I would regard what he shared with you and when as a matter of concern. Not going to call it a red flag, but definitely a matter of concern. Something that if you're going to keep texting with this guy or thinking about dating this guy, you're going to want to keep an eye on. OMG Yes is the leading evidence-based resource about women's pleasure. OMG Yes gets into a level of detail that usually can't happen during a visit to the OBGYN's office or the therapist's office. And did you know, if you're a licensed clinician or therapist, that OMG Yes is free for you? It is. Practical, physical, communication, and psychological techniques from the latest research about what feels good and why, all of it turned into a website designed for maximum impact at OMG Yes. They give details that can help you, listener, detail that can help your clients, OBGYNs and therapists, detail that never feels clinical. OMG Yes features warm, relatable videos of women of all ages and body types who volunteered to be on the site because they felt so strongly that this information needs to be out there. A Journal of Sex Research article last month showed using OMG Yes creates significant large effect size increases in sexual self-knowledge, sexual agency, sexual communication, as well as pleasure and orgasm, both solo and with partners. OMG Yes, designed for women on their own, for partners on their own, and for couples together. And if you're a licensed clinician, go to omgyes.com/doctors to provide your license number and professional website for free personal access. Again, that's omgyes.com/doctors. And if someone you know is a physician, therapist, or clinician, let them know too. omgyes.com/doctors.
Hey, Dan. Straight white male from Eastern Canada calling. My wife and I love your show. Well, we love your column. We only sometimes listen to the show, which is why I'm calling in. I am in a situation where I think I need to use my words. We're in a relationship, like my wife and I have been together for 8 years. We have a 3-year-old kid. He's awesome. Our relationship is awesome, except for we have mismatched libidos now. So I'm the higher libido person. My wife has the lower, relatively lower libido. And before you and all your listeners roll your eyes and lecture me for pairing with someone who has a, you know, different libido, it wasn't always like this. And also, like, I kind of knew what I was getting into. Anyway, the situation is that, like, for the last year or so, I haven't been super happy with my sex life, and I haven't really pushed it either. So, like, my wife's under a lot of stress. Everyone has work, COVID, raising a kid. And so I did try to bring up sex early on in the pandemic, like probably July of last year. We had a chat about it. It didn't go super well. Her feelings were hurt, and I just felt bad about the way it went. Subsequently, I kind of like withdrew a little bit sexually. Like, I stopped initiating, which is kind of weird for me historically. And so for the last little while, like, the sex we have, but once a week, it's like generally initiated by her. And I basically just want to have more. Like, I'm into my wife, just want to have more sex. And so what I'm torn about is like, whether, how to bring this up in terms of like, whether I even need to, because I could just start initiating more and see how that goes and not really have to have some big dramatic conversation about how unsatisfied I am.
Gotta say, once a week with a 3-year-old toddler at home all the time over the last year of the pandemic, not too shabby for still newish parents. Not that you can't feel the feelings you're feeling right now about wanting more. If you've been hanging back and waiting for your wife to initiate, and she's been initiating once a week, and those times when she initiates, she seems to be into it, to want sex. She's not just realizing it's been 7 days since you were last milked, and she's going through the motions. Yeah, it seems to me that rather than attempting to have a conversation, you could just start initiating every once in a while. And I'm not going to jump down your throat for partnering with someone who has a different libido. Libidos wax and wane. You say it wasn't always like this. When you first met, your libidos, the amount of sex that she wanted and you wanted, was more in alignment. Well, over the course of a marriage, particularly one involving children, there will be times, sometimes months, sometimes years, where one person's libido is no longer where it was, or it's out of step, or sometimes somebody's libido spikes and the other person stays where it was. So even if you prioritize sexual compatibility at the start of the relationship around not just what you're into and what you want, but also how often you want to do it, you got to brace yourself in a long-term committed relationship, again, particularly one involving raising children together, that you'll be out of step, sometimes for months, sometimes for years. And how do you get through that? Well, you remind yourself that it won't always be like this. You say about your relationship, your marriage, your sex life, it wasn't always like this. But some part of your head right now, stuck in this phase where you're only getting it once a week, and I can hear other parents of small children out there reacting with jealousy and anger to only getting it once a week, it won't always be like this now either. But you're likelier to lock yourself into a shitty sex life with diminishing returns if you stew in resentment and if you can't communicate about this. I think you could and maybe should communicate about this. Pro tip, though, broaden your definition of sex. Some of my advice is kind of on a collision course, I've realized in the last few months. I'm always telling people to have as broad a definition of sex as possible because then you'll have more sex in your relationship, but while also urging people to have as narrow a definition of possible as cheating so you're less likely to get cheated on. But I'll confront that and unpack that another day. I want to urge you to have a broad definition of sex. If when you initiate sex, it can be oral, it can be mutual masturbation, it can be assisted masturbation where all your wife has to do is lay with you, hold you, play with your tits or talk dirty to you or sit on your face while you have a wank. The more that counts as sex, the more sort of particularly at this stressful time in your lives as relatively still newish parents, the more low stakes, less taxing physical intimacies that you can fold into that week in addition to PIV intercourse that count, the likelier you are to have sex, the likelier you are to still feel connected to your wife, still feel seen, still feel taken care of, and the likelier she is to say yes. As I'm constantly telling the straight guys out there, if every time you said yes to sex, your ass got fucked, you might say yes less often than you would otherwise. So at the very least, communicate with your wife about that. That saying yes to sex doesn't necessarily mean yes to intercourse. Yes to being penetrated can mean yes to mutual masturbation. It can be yes to assisted masturbation just for you. It can be yes to you getting on your knees and eating her pussy and making her come while you have a wank. She doesn't have to get fucked. All those things are sex. All those things are good sex. And all those things count. And who knows, maybe you and your wife are already doing all of those things. You're a listener of my show. Maybe you already regard all those things as sex and as counting. But in my experience, even a lot of straight guys who listen to this show have to be reminded of this. And so I am reminding you just in case. What you want to do ultimately is to be well positioned, not just sexually, but also emotionally, so that when your wife's libido comes roaring back, that your connection hasn't been dissolved in a vat of resentment acid and that you can reconnect, which is going to require you to accept the measly once a week, maybe, that she initiates, and then initiate once a week yourself. And again, broaden that definition of sex and engage in more intimacy and play and less intercourse for now. Fall is almost here, so get ready to start making jokes about people who drink pumpkin spice lattes while secretly drinking pumpkin spice lattes on the down low yourself, and get ready to get cozy at the coziest time of the year, which is almost here. And to enhance your coziness and comfort, you're going to want to lay in some undies, loungewear, and more from MeUndies, because MeUndies believes that comfort is about more than what's touching your skin. It's about feeling comfortable in your skin. Imagine the softest thing you've ever felt. Now imagine that same thing, but on your butt. Even better, imagine the same soft thing, softest thing your skin has ever touched on your legs, on your back, on your tits, shoulders, pits, stomach. That's what I do with my MeUndies loungewear and my MeUndies t-shirts. I can't wait to get home, particularly in the fall when it starts to get a little chilly up here in the Pacific Northwest, and change into my MeUndies loungewear. Their lounge pants, which you can tell I am such a fan of, but also their t-shirts and their underwear, all designed by the country's top softness scientists to be the softest thing you've ever worn, period. From undies, again, to loungewear. Have I mentioned that I'm a fan of the loungewear? MeUndies fabrics are breathable, light, and almost irresponsibly cozy. Really, you're not going to want to stop lounging on the couch once you've got your MeUndies loungewear on, once you've got the whole ensemble. You've been warned. Available in sizes XS through 4XL in a variety of classic colors and iconic prints, MeUndies will have your back and your butt all fall. And MeUndies has a great offer for my listeners. For any first-time purchasers, you get 15% off and free shipping. MeUndies also has their problem-free philosophy. If you're not satisfied with any product for any reason, they'll refund or exchange it. No caveats, no questions, but I promise you, I guarantee, personally, I guarantee you will love your lounge pants. Get the lounge pants! To get 15% off your first order, free shipping, and 100% satisfaction guarantee, go to MeUndies.com/savage. Please let them know the Lovecast sent you. That's MeUndies.com/savage.
Hi, Dan. I'm having a little dilemma at work here, and I wondered if you could help us out here. About a year ago, we had a guy working here, and he was having an affair with one of his coworkers' wives. And that went on for a while. And he got ratted out when another coworker's wife, who he was also messing around with, ratted him out. And in the aftermath, it turned out there was one more consensual relationship amongst another staff member. And also we get students and interns here. And he was also kind of messing around with one of those. And I'm not sure. That's just what I know. I know there was more. There was a big investigation into it. And anyway, this would all be water under the bridge, except we hired this fucker back. This is known by management. The women involved before have all moved on to different things. We do have some new people here. And I'm kind of wondering, you know, do I have I feel like a duty to warn some of these women that we have working here about this guy. You know, is it good to confront him? You know, I don't have a problem asking him if he's, or not to shit where he eats, you know, in front of everybody. I'd appreciate hearing your perspective and maybe any tips you have for navigating this new, hopefully not too toxic work environment.
So there was an investigation, and your company hired this guy back after all the chaos and drama that he stirred up with his dick. And it must be pretty nice dick, considering that every married woman who's employed by your company wants to take a ride on it. You say that all the women that he fucked around with have left the company, and that has me concerned about whether there's a hostile work environment at your company and there is tolerance for this guy and his shitty behavior, if indeed it was shitty. If these weren't consensual peer relationships that happened at work, you don't say that this guy was in management and he was exploiting people or pressuring people, preying on people who were under him in the org flow chart. I assume, perhaps naively, that if he had been abusing his authority or power to get into these women's pants, that they wouldn't have hired him back, that he'd be gone, and maybe some of these women would still be there. But they're gone. He's there. There are new women on staff. Do you have a duty to warn? I assume the new women on staff are grown-ass adult women who can make their own choices. Ideally, we all want to make informed choices. The fact that this guy is an irresistible player, kind of a Lothario, kind of a slut. That might be information that these women, the new women at work, all of whom presumably, like all of the women who used to be at this company, are going to fuck him at some point, might want to have in hand, factor into their decision, the choice that they're going to make about whether to fuck this guy or not. But I don't know how you get out in front of this without seeming like the problem at work, like the creep, like captain controlling cock block cop. I would advise you just to stay the fuck out of it and to hope that if he stirs up fresh drama, having consensual sex with multiple people at work who are married to other people who are not at work, that there'll be another investigation and maybe this time his ass will get fired. He's not sleeping with you, and this ain't your company to run. And if he's not abusing his position, his power, his authority, if he's not in management and sleeping with people under him, yeah, I don't know how you involve yourself in this without seeming like the crazy person, without seeming like the problem here. So, yeah, stay the fuck out of it. That would be my advice.
Hi, Dan. I am a straight woman from the South. My ex and I broke up roughly a month ago. We had been seeing each other for just over a year, and we had never had PIV sex that entire time of our relationship, and he had a very strict Catholic upbringing. And when I asked him when we first started, you know, seeing each other, you know, about sex, I knew he was what he calls a quote-unquote virgin. I think that's so silly. It makes me laugh. Because, I mean, he had been very intimate and sexual with multiple women throughout his life. So, regardless, he had never had PIV. And so I was just trying to understand why. You know, I didn't want to shame him. I was really into him, insanely physically attracted to him. And he also stimulated me mentally, made me laugh a lot. And that's another love language of mine. His response to me was, it better be the right person. And then I just accepted that. And I dated him for like many, many, many months. And like I said, just over a year. And we never had PIV. It was still very hot. It was still very sexy. But anyway, I feel like he withheld one of my favorite pastimes, is what I like to say. And I'm just curious your thoughts on that. I know you were raised Catholic, have a Catholic background, but also I think I just kind of could use some hope in like knowing that there's a lot of men out there that are really trying to understand women and how to be progressive with sex that are also straight.
Occam's razor, often the obvious answer is the correct answer. He had a strict Catholic upbringing. He also answered the question when you put it to him, why no POV? He was waiting for the right person. He obviously didn't feel that you were the right person. And so PIV wasn't on the menu. All sorts of other things were on the menu, which I think is crazy hypocritical. If you're doing mutual masturbation and oral sex and rolling around and humping each other, even having anal sex, as some people who are saving PIV for marriage do, those are distinctions without much of a difference. And if you're denying your sex partner their favorite thing, what may be for them the most important, meaningful, physically satisfying, gratifying sex act, well, that seems a little selfish, even a little manipulative. But yeah, you know why this guy wasn't sticking his dick in your twat. He told you. Strict Catholic saving himself for marriage. Maybe there's something else going on. Maybe there are a lot of other things going on. Maybe the strict Catholic upbringing and saving himself for marriage was an excuse. Maybe he was covering for performance anxiety. Maybe the premature ejaculation when PIV happens has been a problem for him in past relationships. Maybe he has a white hot fear of knocking someone up and so wants to avoid PIV. With the facts and evidence, the strict Catholic upbringing and the things that he told you when you asked him, and he's the one who would know why he didn't want to do this. Yeah, that's it. That's it. Catholic, religious zap on his head, saving himself or some small part of himself or one particular sex act for the person he marries. And in the year that you were together, he never decided or determined that you were the person that he wanted to marry. And I assure you, there are tons of straight guys out there, the overwhelming majority of them, upwards of 95% of them, who are perfectly happy to have PIV sex before marriage, PIV sex with their girlfriends, PIV sex with people that they've just met. You won't have to get online for long before you encounter several hundred thousands of those guys. All right, before we get to response calls, let's read some of your tweets about the show. Sverdka tweets, LOL, wow, listening to the rant at the top of this week's Savage Lovecast while on an American Airlines flight was a trip within a trip. I got a lot of pushback from listeners who were offended by my rant at the top of last week's podcast. Mostly I heard from people who didn't think they should have to close their window shades. It was amazing how butt sore some people were about that rule. One of my three rules for airline passengers, it's rule number two. It comes between rule number one, shut your mouth, and rule number three, shut your fucking mouth. I am not the FAA. I am not a member of the cabin crew. You don't have to shut your window if you don't want to just because the mean podcaster said so. But if I am on your flight, you do have to live with being silently despised by me. Shelley tweets to the young couple that called into the Savage Lovecast worried about moving in next door to their parents and their parents expecting invites to all of their dinner parties. Let them know that they don't have to invite you to all of their dinner parties either. And finally, Dr. Jamie Bear tweets, as much as I am turned on hearing about at fake Dan Savage washing his arse and how his husband and he use their mattress for more than just sleeping every week, I've given in and spent $36 on a year of the Magnum version of the Savage Lovecast, twice as long and no more capitalism. Thank you, Dr. Jamie Bear, for subscribing to the Magnum version of the Savage Lovecast, which is indeed twice as long and no ads. But with or without capitalism, we all got to clean our asses and we all got to sleep somewhere, right? And I feel like I got to warn you, Jamie, maybe you didn't see it in the small print, but one of the perks of becoming a Magnum subscriber to the Savage Lovecast is that I randomly call one Magnum subscriber every week and leave that week's ads on their voicemail. So there's still a chance that you're going to hear about my hygiene practices. Thanks to everyone who posted to your social media, Instagram, Twitter, everywhere else about the Savage Lovecast this week. We really appreciate it when people help spread the word. And if you want me to read your tweet on next week's Savage Lovecast, be sure to use the hashtag Savage Lovecast. And now, listener response calls.
Hi, Dan. I'm a Magnum subscriber and I'm calling in response to the poor woman who's dealing with a piece of shit who is not having sex with her because she's 10 pounds heavier. Your advice is absolutely on the money. This is absurd. It makes no sense. What he's doing is controlling. I don't see an out on this. I suspect you're with a narcissist. If you find that he is lifting you up, dropping you down, lifting you up, dropping you down, this is 101 with narcissists where they will maintain you on your heels at all time. They'll love bomb you and then they'll cut you down into little pieces. This does not really have a solution. So gotta get out of there. This man is gonna do the same thing to your child, by the way. And you're gonna have to make sure that child is trained to understand the kind of person that is their father. Because it's quite likely that this golden child is a representation of him, an extension of him, and he feels super, super committed to making that representation of him shine. So, I'm sorry. I really am. I trust and know that it's not you, it's him. And 10 pounds ain't shit. Dump his ass.
Hi, Dan. I am a 52-year-old straight woman, and I was listening to your talk with the dad whose preteen daughter thought that she was a lesbian because she thought boys were gross. And I'll be honest with you, I think boys that age are gross. From about 8 to 13, they're just disgusting. So, Dad, don't worry if your daughter thinks boys at that age are gross. They are, and they will stop being gross when they discover girls, and she may be more interested in them. Not to say that if she's a lesbian, that's a problem, but boys being gross at that age, totally normal. They are gross at that age.
I just wanted to respond to the woman in the last episode who was calling about her boyfriend's nipples. I'm calling to tell you that this is, yes, indeed possible. About 10 years ago, I met a younger man who was very into me because he liked daddies. And I was very into him because he's a sexy boy with a blonde beard and I'm into blonde beards. And I started playing with his nipples when we were having sex. And he said, oh, that doesn't really work for me. And I just kept at it. And then I moved away. And before I left town, he made sure to tell me that the best present I gave him was to teach him about his nipples because I was persistent and I just played with his nipples and they became very powerful for him. I would also add to Dan's suggestion of tit clamps, make sure they're adjustable. Have fun.
And we're going to leave it there. Got a question for me or a comment about this week's show? There are two ways for you to get them to us. You can call us at 206-302-2064, or you can use the Voice Memo app on your phone to record your question or your comment and email it to us at voicemail@savagelovecast.com. This Thursday, we're doing another Sack Lunch, an exclusive hangout for Magnum subscribers, where we answer questions together and we get to know each other a little bit better on Zoom. If you're a subscriber already to the Magnum, you don't have to do anything. We will send out a Zoom link on the morning of Thursday, September 2nd, and then you just hop on and join the fun at noon Pacific time. If you're not a subscriber and you want to be, if you want to come to Sack Lunch and maybe give some sex advice with me, head to savagelovecast.com and learn more. And my Dirty Little Film Festival Hump is headed out on tour, heading to theaters for vaccinated fans throughout the U.S. and Canada with our Hump 2021 lineup from last spring. There's also a new Hump's Greatest Hits that will be streaming online starting September 10th. And don't forget, the deadline for making your film, your debut in Hump, your film for Hump, is December 8th, which is right around the corner. Go to humpfilmfest.com. Follow me on Twitter at FakeDanSavage. Follow Corin McSherry on Twitter at CMCSHERR. The Savage Lovecast is produced every week by Nancy Hartunian and me and the tech-savvy at-risk youth and Nancy. We'll all be back at you next week with an installment of the Savage Lovecast.